How's everybody doing? Thank you for the opportunity to present. Thank you, Dr. Farquhar, and thank you also to my co-investigators. Our project was funded in part by the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Project of the Medical College of Wisconsin. I have no disclosures. Well, kind of I do, but you know, okay. In 2010, approximately 85% of high school students didn't meet Healthy People 2020 objectives for aerobic activities, which is basically 60 minutes of physical activity every day. We know that lack of physical activity is linked with many chronic conditions. We also are aware that for a lot of youth, an opportunity to look at health careers as a way of finding a family-sustaining wage, especially two-year programs where youth can look at health career options that don't require a medical degree, that can be a respiratory tech or some type of activity where they can spend 2 years in school and make a nice wage. Being able to target youth, especially in the middle school and high school ages, where they are, you know, kind of teetering on whether they're going to stay with schooling or not, is really important, and getting them into that health career pipeline. We know that churches are a vital part of physical activity and health promotion activities for adults. Research has suggested that when the church supports a certain behavior, the parishioners are more likely to adapt that behavior. It's been found with adults, but not necessarily with youth. There's kind of an innovative strategy called health advocates, and this is training community members to become lay experts. These are people that are within that community that will establish those healthy lifestyle practices and be role models for behaviors within that community. Our study was set in the Amani neighborhood of Milwaukee, and if you're not familiar with where Milwaukee, Wisconsin is, we're just north of Chicago. Greater New Birth Church is located within the Amani neighborhood, a predominantly poor African-American community with high rates of joblessness, poverty, high number of adults over age 25 who haven't completed high school, severe social challenges of violence and crime, and has the lowest socioeconomic status in the city of Milwaukee. Greater New Birth Church has about 1,500 adult members and 300 youth members. The purpose of the Guiding Youth Movement, or what we call the GYM study, is kind of twofold. First, we want to train adult members of Greater New Birth Church to be health advocates. They would assist us as we, in the second part of the study, implemented a 10-week youth physical activity and health career awareness program. The health advocates were adult members of Greater New Birth Church. They didn't have to have any health experience previously. They just had to have experience working with youth. Five females and two males were part of the group. They ranged in ages kind of a little bit younger than a typical health advocate would be, but they all were more than willing to participate in the training. They all filled out our physical activity readiness questionnaire because what we felt like is if our adults understood the importance of physical activity, they can translate that to the youth. So each of our sessions included some type of physical activity component. We wanted to find out, is our training worthwhile? So we asked the adult health advocates during each training session to fill out a weekly session evaluation. We used it to problem solve, to figure out if we were doing the right thing, to find out what their interests were. And then they also filled out a post-training survey. Our training consisted of six weekly sessions. It was about 12 hours total. We focused on youth physical activity, nutrition. We've got some of the sample topics listed there. The health advocates really liked that they got together and were able to talk about some of the issues that are affecting their youth. They knew what was going on. They wanted to find out how they could better be role models and advocates for good health for the youth. So 6 weeks of training, 12 hours of total, where sessions were led by our GYM project staff, two third-year medical students. We had a physician come in just to really visit with the health advocates about the training and the gym program overall. Our findings were very encouraging. Health advocates attended 5 of the 6 sessions on average. They really liked the topics that focused on nutrition and liked topics that focused on things that had to do with high-risk behaviors, especially the environmental things. You know, and again, it wasn't new to them, but they like to be able to talk about issues in a environment where they could kind of learn and discuss some of those things that maybe they didn't know about corner store selections or especially the nutrition components. Being an exercise physiologist, I always wanted to find the physical activity part as their favorite, but that was okay. You know, they like to talk about nutrition, and that was good. A couple of the things that they talked about, though, we asked them which of the components they liked the best. They said, we kind of grouped them together in qualitative analysis, health information foundations. One of the advocates said, by learning about physical activity and nutrition, we're setting the foundations to help the youth. They knew that this was building a structure within their church for their youth to be able to have a resource throughout the rest of their development. Environmental influences on health. One of the advocates said, exploring the reality of the influence of unsafe neighborhoods on health has been valuable to me. So they found that real valuable. And then the practicality of the program. And here's my little plug for exercise. The hands-on activities like the 2,000 steps walked equals 1 mile was very helpful. So we had them wear pedometers during one of the training sessions, just so they got a sense of, you know, all those accumulated physical activity components are really important. Our gym youth program then was a 10-week program that we held at the Northside YMCA, which is centrally located to the Amani neighborhood within Milwaukee. We recruited 24 middle and high school age youth, 14 females and 10 males. Each of the youth filled out a health history screening questionnaire, and we got the consents from their parents. We wanted to make sure that if any of the youth had any limitations for activity, that those were known to our trainers. We also asked the youth to fill out weekly session evaluations. We knew that this was a 1-year pilot project, and we wanted to find out from the youth, is this something you enjoy? And if you don't enjoy it, tell us how we can do it better. And so we wanted to get that important feedback from them. We also knew that we needed to, for our funder and also for ourselves, see if the youth improved their endurance. And we chose to go with the Omni rating of perceived exertion. Has anybody heard of the rating of perceived exertion? Yeah. It's a scale from 0 to 10, and on the graphic, and this is what we showed our health advocates as well as our youth, we said, during activity, how tired are you? Because we know that rating of perceived exertion correlates very strongly with heart rate and with respiration. If they're more tired, they're working harder. And we felt like, as a steering committee, we didn't want to do a test where one of the youth would finish last. Because how many of you guys have been in the 12-minute run and you've been the last finisher? Or the 20-meter shuttle and you're the first person out? We knew that we needed some measurement, but we didn't want something that the youth felt like they were going to do poorly in. So we used the rating of perceived exertion scale. The youth loved it. And we based the information partially on their session evaluations. They really liked sessions where we did interactive games like the double dutch, jump rope, the relay races, where the pastor was out there doing the relay races with the kids and the health advocates helped in the scoring of the events. They liked events where they could interact with their peers. Each of the sessions included a 1-minute running and then 1-minute walking repeated 10 times. By the 10th week, they were running for 4 minutes and walking for 1 minute. We also asked them to do accumulated minutes, so we wanted them to track accumulated minutes outside of the physical activity session. And then the other component was we really felt it was important to have education sessions. for the youth. And again, we've mentioned some of the education sessions up here. We wanted the youth to have those foundations for good nutrition, healthy lifestyle practices, but primarily health career awareness. For the youth to be able to see a respiratory tech job, what does that look like? An RN, what does that look like? What would I need to do to position myself to be successful in that career? This was a really proud moment for me as an instructor at a technical college. We had our students come in as a service learning project and speak with the youth about what it's like to be going back to school in your late 20s and what it's like to manage a career and manage a household and work full-time, all those things. Our MATC service learning students did an excellent job, as well as the nurses committee members within the church, and speaking with the youth on the different health careers. Like I said, our final sample, what we chose to use as our final sample, was individuals that completed at least 7 of the 10 sessions. Much like your program, Rosie, where you said you have to be here to be a completer, we said you have to attend at least 7 of the 10 sessions to be a part of our sample. Our average age was 14 years, average body mass index right around 26. They loved the activities. They even liked the running. How about that? So we were pretty fired up about that. One of the females said what she liked best about the program: I ran the whole time we were supposed to run. I felt great. Another one, 13-year-old female, running today, I was very, very proud of myself. And that was, you know, we can just pack up the bags and go home, because that's a good thing. Our weekly accumulated minutes data was inconclusive. We had a hard time helping the youth understand what moderate activity was, what vigorous activity was, how to record the activity. We know that other research says that that's not the easiest thing to do, to get self-reported data, but we think it's something that at least they increase their awareness on physical activities outside of a gymnasium. Here's our rating of perceived exertion during activity graph. We put a line of best fit. Bottom line is, week five, where they were running for 2 minutes, their rate of perceived exertion was statistically significantly higher than it was at week 10 when they were running for twice as long. And so we feel like they improved their endurance, and they also were working hard enough to have some sort of training effect. We had our youth do a 5K run walk. Here's some pictures of some of the youth. One of the boys said, after a lifetime of failure, and granted, he was 12 years old when he said this, after a lifetime of failure, I finally accomplished something. And just as surprised as he could be, and it was exercise, he was just dumbfounded that he could actually do a 5K race. And we felt that that was really important for them to not just be in the gymnasium, to be out in the community, interacting with other people at a road race in the community. And then our educational sessions, they really liked. We had some high school cross-country athletes come in and speak. They liked that. They loved talking about blood donation. They had a blood drive at their church, and some of the nurses came in and talked to the youth about why it's important to give blood, and then also talked about physical activity. They knew then that exercise was something that they could do in their daily routine. The health advocates led a session on nutrition, food labels, and they said taco salad's 820 calories, so stay away. And then, honestly, you can't be a felon if you want a good job. You know, we felt like we were getting the message across through so many different resources. Overall, the strong faith community support is what drove the program. Our strengths is having that community support, having strong pastoral support, having good health advocates. Our limitations was a small sample size. We don't know the sustainability of it, but we feel like the use of community social structures, age, and the promotion of healthy lifestyle practices for youth in an urban environment. References, they're also on the website. And questions. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much to all 6 of our presenters. So we have time for questions that I'll repeat up here. And if you could introduce yourself as well, your name? Do you mind coming up? Come up here and speak into the microphone. So the question was about using a randomized control sampling method in CBPR.
Again, I'm Marnie Loyakno-Mervis. So I feel your pain. So it is difficult in a community-based participatory research project to do randomized control trial, and we still struggle with that. Is it a best fit for the community? So how do we make it work, given that that is our funding? So I think, well, we do informed consent. We don't do it on the program end. We do it when they're actually enrolled in the research project as a whole. So there's an opt-out process where we send postcards to the families, the parents or guardians of our teens at either through the community centers or the schools, and they have a 7 to 10 day window period where they can opt out of the process. And if they choose not to opt out, and they can call an anonymous hotline so they don't have to speak personally to someone if that's also a fear. And after that opt out process, they get, if they choose not to opt out, they get a packet of information about the research project, including the informed consent, and then the kids bring the informed consent when they come to take their survey, their questionnaire, to be enrolled in the study. We were able to combine it into just one consent process, so they're not signing a consent both for the research enrollment and then the program again, which a lot of our other projects do. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but we do have an informed consent. Did you want to add something?
We do have that, but we always send it back. We do not enroll anybody into the study until they have a parental consent form. The difficulty with us has been that when a child is given into a control group rather than the experimental group, that's when the difficulty happens. And there are a lot of times kids just stand and say, why can't I do the program? That is the hard part to deal with and explain to them as to, we don't make the choice, the computer did, this is how the randomization list works and this is how it works. So I think that's where the main problem is.
And also because it's done at their community sites, they know their friends were invited and they weren't. So that, that was a hard part too, versus if it was just like another.
And maybe the presenters can stick around if you have more specific questions. Great time to get those answered. One more question? I have a quick question about policy. I know that you had mentioned in the last presentation the importance of environment, and we know that healthy choices aren't made, are difficult to make in unhealthy environments. So I'm wondering if any of you looked at state, county, national level policy and incorporated that into your research or into your programs. All right.
I think in our program we did look at the Healthy Youth 2010 program, and we looked at the situations and associations as to what we needed to include in the programs, and also looked at the research and looked at what is recommended for those programs. So we tried to include as much as we could, and we always went by the guidelines of each community center or each school as to what they needed in the programs as well to adapt the program. So the program in some way has the core facilities for every place, but we always change the content a bit to suit the limitations or the regulations of every place that we did the program in. That's how we did it.
And I just wanted to add one piece. When I said at the end of my presentation that a lot is still continuing the work of addressing mental health disparities, what they're doing right now is looking on a more policy level, and particularly around things like the educational system and how different policies in that itself impacts their mental health. So I think that's the direction we're going with.
And just quickly, I just wanted to add that for the Jenkins County, what we've had is we actually have a county commissioner who sits on our coalition, and what she did was she reviewed the She reviewed the county strategic plan and the city of Millen strategic plan, and to find out if they had anything related to health in their strategic plan for the next 10 years, because they're required to do that by the state. And so they did see that there were some things, and they actually found that there was some mention of a community garden of some sort in their strategic plan for the county. And so now they're actually working with, they're going to do something with the school to partner with the school for a school garden grant, working with the FFA. So they're really trying to kind of partner and see where they can garner resources from the community and the political level kind of way, where if, you know, we, and that's part of the training, is sort of on helping them understand that if these are things that they say they're going to do in the strategic plan, then these are opportunities for you to step in and say, well, you said you were going to do this. Well, let's see how we can get some resources going from the county, because the county said they were going to do that. So we're really kind of working on the advocacy with them as well.